Can you say the letter C?
Kick it off, run through these sponsors real quick, and we'll freaking dive right into it, man.
Yeah, all good.
Perfect. All right, welcome back. Another week, another episode. Man, it is hunting season now. I'm going to run through the wheels that make the wagon go here real quick so we can dive into this one. This is going to be a good one. I'm super stoked to have this guy on, super stoked to hear him talk. You guys are going to be super stoked to gain all this knowledge that's going to spew out of Dan's mouth here in a little bit. Grizzly Coolers, code WCB, save you some money. If you don't have coolers at this point and you need them, get a hold of those guys ASAP. I know they've been restocked since summer, so there's a good chance you still can get everything you need. I know they had a big push in the summer to get everything back in stock, so give those guys a look. Black Ovis, WCB10. Man, any last-minute thing you need shipped to your house, maybe it's arrows, arrow ID builder, they can have stuff shipped to you. Maybe you're running low and need some arrows shipped to you. They got about a 7-day turnaround on those, so WCB10, save you some money there. Novix tree stands right there in the great state of Illinois. Hang and hunt setups, ladders, sticks, you name it, they got it. Don't be slacking on the whitetail stuff. That's coming up here quicker than you think. A lot of states open up in the end of September, early October. That's not far off. And let's see, who am I forgetting? Oh, old Devin Leonard over there, Hunter's Box Club. We got a sweet box that I can't give away the logo and what actually is going on there. But let's just say it's going to go fall right into what this podcast is primarily going to be about. September themed. That should get you thinking. Big bugling. And I'll stop there. I totally didn't give it away. I didn't give it totally away, but you read between the lines. So with that being said, man, I got a mountain monster, a mountain rat. I don't even know how you want to describe this guy. I got one of the baddest dudes that I've had the pleasure of sharing camp with and calling a good buddy. None other than Mr. Montana himself, Dan Hevern. Dan, how's it going, brother?
Yeah, good. You're enjoying the heat of summer right now.
Yes, you are. You just got back from some heat and some elevation and some wild times with Mr. Brian Barney. Yeah, man. Give us a before we dive into that, man, there's going to be guys recognize you and know you, and there's going to be guys not. So for those that don't, give me a quick rundown. Who is Dan? Give me the 401 on you, my man.
Oh man, just family guy trying to become a bow hunter. You know how it goes. Struggle of bow hunting. It's not easy, but yeah, I've kind of dedicated myself to the bow for, I would say, 16 straight years now, I think. I haven't picked up a rifle since, so I'm just trying to get accomplished doing that route.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, Dan, you've got a really cool job. I mean, I've got to firsthand take a tour and kind of see what's going on there, and you know, but give people a little insight into like what you do and how long you've been doing it. I mean, your gig's pretty kick ass. It's pretty freaking cool, like what you do for a living.
Yeah, pretty fortunate. I got on running some of these hydro generation, these dams in Montana. So kind of started out in Great Falls where there's 5 dams there, and worked my way up. Ended up heading over to Helena and work at that's called the Hauser Dam here. So we got 6 hydro generators that I kind of run and work with 3 other guys. So it's kind of, we run the whole dam and generation, everything, kind of help provide power to the grid here in Montana. So it's just kind of a cool deal. Pretty cool day shift for me. Provides me a lot of time off to do what I really want. So yeah, it's a good gig. Pretty fortunate. I've been doing it for about 12 years now. So yeah, it's pretty cool, man. I don't really have any complaints about that.
No, that is the kicker, man. That's really cool. You just recently got married. I unfortunately was not able to make the wedding, which I'm sure was a hell of a party, but congrats to you and Keels on that. I want to make sure I say that on the podcast. Man, I was disappointed I wasn't able to make it out there, but I know I'm sure it was a I'm sure you guys probably had a drink or two for me.
Oh man, it was a good time. It was definitely the party of the year. Come to find out, you know, a lot of good buddies showed up, and yeah, too bad you couldn't make it. Keels is like, is Clint gonna come? I'm like, I don't know. He lives a long ways away.
Man, I
probably
really,
saving his days to hunt. You know,
I had the days. It was more or less just the schedule with the kids and trying to kind of get that spun around and whatnot. You guys know how it is, but yeah, man, congrats on that. That's I mean, won't really change much. You guys have been together a long time, and she's been through the hunting ropes and whatnot, so it's not like that's really a gigantic change in the dynamics. You guys have been through the hunting seasons and done the whole deal for many, many years now, so it's nothing really new.
Right. She, you know, I found a good one. She definitely has my back with how many days I'm gone. I mean, I'll be gone back-to-back. I'll go Colorado, Wyoming back-to-back, be gone for almost 30 days straight,
yep.
You know? So it gets kind of wild. She just kind of has my back. She runs the house and the kids and animals and just kind of keeps everything straight. So, yeah, she's a good one. I'm pretty fortunate to land this one, you know?
Absolutely, my man. No doubt. No doubt about that. Well, now, there's probably some guys that are going to recognize you out there because you've also got, you know, it's a pretty cool gig that you got too. You know, you and a lot of guys know Brian Barney, and I talk about Brian and you a lot, and a lot of guys probably hear me talk about Brian and Dan and whatnot. And, you know, you and Brian are each other's right-hand man. You guys do primarily all your hunting together, or I'd say a very big portion of it. And you guys recently just got back from Nevada, where Brian scores on a really, really good buck over there. So,
right, yeah, that was quite the trip, man. I'll tell you what, it was not the easiest.
It sounded like it, and I didn't want to ask Brian too much about it because I knew I was going to have you on the podcast, and I wanted to run through it. But give us a breakdown, man. Give us a breakdown of, you know, just kind of that hunt and what went on. And I know it was a crazy ass kicker as far as elevation right out of the gate. If I remember correctly, it was over 3,000 feet, like right out of the truck door, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, exactly. So show up down there, it's pushing 100 degrees.
Good old Nevada.
So get out of the truck, and I look up. We got a couple buddies. I started hunting with this new guy a couple years ago, so you have to meet up with him pretty soon. But Dylan Ness and Brian Barney met me down there, so we kind of hooked up and had a camera guy, which is super cool. Got to capture the whole hunt on film, so that'd be a good one to check out. But, yeah, open the door of the truck and look up and go, you've got to be kidding me. Like, it was, immediately 3,600 foot climb just
right
out of the door.
Holy shit. Dang.
And of course, we planned it right, you know, midday. Just let's start a hike midday
right
when
the
it's
heat.
The hottest. So.
Yep.
So, yeah, we dropped a few pounds out of the pack right away just because it's like, man, the lighter, the better. So I ended up leaving my spot and scope at the truck and just went super light. But we're both, I mean, all of our packs were like, you know, 40 to 46 pounds and then climb all the way up there. And then we stayed for, I don't know, six nights, something like that up there.
Yeah.
It was good. It was different. They doubled the amount of tags this year in a couple of the areas that we were hunting. So the pressure, I've never seen so much pressure before. I mean, just guys on every ridge
right.
And, you know, all over the place. Guys with goats and llamas and, you know, just kind of
wild. Yeah.
So get up there and just start picking it apart. I've never hunted this unit before, so just, you know, a couple of days of glassing. Ended up seeing just a few, I mean, handful of bucks, two definite shooters. Of course, Brian got on a really good one, just made just a crazy stalk down this just sheer cliff. Like, I don't even know how him and the camera guy made it down a couple of the ridge lines that they had to cross and then back out, have the buck stand up and kind of move, and they had to back out and then gain all their elevation again to come back down on them. And to be able to watch that, I only got to watch just a little bit of that. Dylan, he was through the scope, got to watch the whole hunt, so he was just super excited to see
it.
I
bet.
Mean, even watching the hunt, it's like you're there.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So that was pretty wild. So I ended up getting one buck out of the deal. You know, I didn't get elevation poisoning or anything, but I ended up coming down, getting pretty sick up on the mountain and trying to last through those big, huge hailstorms and lightning storms, and it was just pretty wild. You couldn't be up on the ridge all day
right.
Glassing like you wanted to. You had, like, 2-hour window here, 2-hour window right. There, in the meantime, you're dropping your elevation to get out all the lightning and, you know, all that stuff. You know, trees falling over, and it's just kind of wild. Big storms. I mean, just like Nevada always is, you know?
Yeah, Nevada and Colorado, man, they're just electric. They're just fucking electric states. I mean, it's... if you don't like lightning, or if you're scared of lightning, that's not good high country to be in, because you're gonna, you know, I've never hunted Colorado yet where I didn't have to ride out at least a couple, just, for lack of better terminology, like ass puckering lightning storms. I mean, and I always heard before I hunted Colorado by myself, I always heard you and Brian, I've got to share camp with you guys quite a bit over the years, and I always heard you guys talk about, you know, just those midday bangers that come through and just crazy lightning, and you're on a ridgeline and you're glassing from a vantage point, and all of a sudden you look over your shoulder and here comes the black, and then within 5-10 minutes, man, there it is. And it's like, I never, you know, lightning's never really bothered me, but I mean, here in Ohio, I'm at 5,600 feet, you know, not 13,500, and I remember riding out the first one, the first bad one I ever rode out by myself. I remember sitting there thinking, like, gosh damn, like, I know what these guys are talking about now. I mean, like, just holy shit, get me through this. Like, you know, you're just like praying to God you don't get shistabobbed up there. And it's like, you know, sometimes you can drop elevation and get into trees, but like, I was in a spot where there really was nothing, you know, I just got caught. I just got caught, and I had to, you know, get my bow away from me and, basically just hunker behind a bunch of big rocks, you know. That's like, it's like all you had, and it's wild to think about, but like, after it's all said and done, it like, it's crazy to be like, yeah, I rode that one out, like, hell yeah. But then you start thinking, you're like, man, like, how bad could that have been? Like, you know, it's bad up there, like when it's pitch black dark.
It's different when you're,
and it like lights the whole sky up to where you can see the whole basin
it's
below
when
you
up there. Yeah, for sure. And then being up in the mountains, it's like, I don't think a lot of people understand, it's like the amphitheater up there. The thunder booms off the mountains and the ridgelines, and it echoes, and it's just kind of crazy. You get some of those storms where it's every second there's a lightning bolt going off, you know. It's just kind of wild. It's like sitting, you know, living in Montana, you know, we get some pretty good lightning storms around here. You get a watch and they're cool, but it's totally different when you're up in the storm at 11,000 feet and it's just popping off around you. It's like you're in, it, almost like you're in battle, you know. It's just wild.
Yeah, it really is. I'll never forget that first one I rode out, man. It was crazy. But yeah, that's awesome though, man. The adventure and what comes with hunts like Nevada and Colorado, that high country, I mean, that's just freaking... Man, there's not a lot that beats that, except for maybe what we're going to talk about, and that's chasing big bugling bulls in September. And I don't know if I know anybody that loves to chase elk as much as you do. I mean, I've got to be on a couple elk hunts with you. We spent, gosh, how many days did we get our ass kicked in Idaho that one year? 13, 14, something like that.
That was a struggle.
Oh, my gosh. But, no, man, you know, you're consistently one of the most successful guys I know. I don't know if I know anyone that honestly gets themselves into more opportunities than you. And that's, you know, just flat out because of how hard you work and grind. And I mean, it's years and years and years of figuring out and learning elk. And you know, you guys are always hunting new spots, different spots, and it doesn't matter. You know, you're always putting yourself in position to kill good bulls and opportunities. And, man, those are hard to come by. I don't care who you are, what unit you're in. It's tough to get a opportunity, let alone multiple. And it just seems like, you know, you're always finding a way to get yourself in good opportunities. And, you know, like I said, without being said, it you know, it doesn't even really need to be said, but I'm going to say it. It's a grind, man. You're a grinder, and you always get it figured out. But what's always been intriguing to me about you and Brian, you guys don't have the bag of tricks and that a lot of elk hunters have, as far as you guys have different tools in your toolbox. Your guys' main tool is not a bugle tube and mouth calls and reeds. Like, I mean, to be honest, I don't even know. Do you guys even carry those anymore? I mean, I've been on a few hunts where I don't even know if you guys carried that, to be honest with you. And maybe you did. If you did, you never pulled it out. But calling is not your guys' game, and I've picked this up from hunting with you guys, and I've adapted to where I kind of, I guess you could say, I've morphed into kind of hunting bulls and herds like the way you guys are doing it, coyoteing the herd, being silent, finding them at night, and sticking with them. And man, I've fallen in love with it. And I learned all that from you guys. And it's kind of what I want to talk about today, man. I want to pick your brain on it because I think more and more people are realizing, you know, calling's awesome. And if you can find a bull that's hot and wants to come in to a bugle or a cow call, oh, there's nothing better. But with all the pressure, all the people, the craze of bow hunting elk, as popular as it is, these bulls are getting smarter quicker, and they're getting smarter and way harder to call in. And if that's the only, I guess you could say, tool in your toolbox, I think you're really, really limiting yourself, especially in certain units. So give us a breakdown, Dan. Kind of, I guess, when the light bulb went off for you, you know, that there was more than one way to kill a big bull. You know, the old saying, there's more than one way to skin a cat. There's definitely more than one way to kill a big bull. But what's kind of morphed you into kind of the elk hunter that you are, and why do you feel like that's kind of your most, I guess, effective way to hunt bulls is doing it how you and Brian have basically taught me to do it?
So I'm just thinking about it here. The reason why everything kind of changed, you know, when I was younger, I always wanted to have the bugle tube and all the you know, the big necklace full of cow calls and yep. The mouth reeds. And I mean, it was cool. It's like what yep. You saw on TV, and you see people doing it, and people are successful doing it.
Yep.
And that's great. You know, that's super great. So what's happened with, like, I guess my hunting career, hunting along with Brian, you know, it's pretty wild. So we hunt multiple states every year.
Yep.
And so I don't have, like, an entire season in Montana for elk. I'm too busy. Like, I'll be in Nevada or New Mexico or wherever hunting, so it only gives me a couple weeks in Montana. It might be beginning of elk season. It might be the rut. It might be, you know, post-rut elk hunting. And so right. Doing that, you can't, or me, this is just my opinion. I can't just have a bugle tube and think it's going to work every single time when I show up to a hunt.
Right.
Like I said, they might not be red hot. They might be, I in Montana, I hunt what's called the Missouri River Breaks at times. And it is like hunting giant antelope out there. They are right. So high pressured, and they're so on their game that you can't call. They'll look at you in your direction, and they'll just turn and leave. I've seen it so many times. See people with bugle tubes. They're like, yeah, we can't get into them. It's like, well, yeah, because you let every single critter on the mountain know that you're here. I mean, they're right. Just, they're so used to it. So I think my theory is if I can't rely on the bugle tube, I don't want to. I don't want to be handicapped to that. I want to be able to always get into elk, no matter if it's early season or late. I always want to be able to give myself the best opportunity.
Right.
And in my mind, not letting them know that I'm there and hunting them strictly spot and stalk. Just I rely on my eyes, on my glass, and my feet to get myself into elk and into bow range. And by doing that, I can go to the breaks and hunt the most highly pressured elk on the planet, or I can go to New Mexico and hunt elk down there. Anywhere I go, I can hunt and be into elk and not have to rely on just the bugle tube or the cow calls. So I would rather just go silent mode and never, ever make a noise. I want to be able to shoot a bull with the bull's head down or the bull bugling, not even having a clue that I'm around. That's it for me. That's the best kill I can possibly come up with, is when he has no clue what just happened to him.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't like spooking him.
Yep.
It's just kind of how I've learned. Like I said, just years of hunting, I've just learned to basically not be handicapped. Just being able to show up and hunt elk just like I do mule deer. Just 100% spot elk, and it just seems to work out, you know. Elk's actually, like, my biggest struggle for some reason. I've killed, I think, antelope. I'm like 10 years in a row with the bow. I got a bunch of bucks. Bulls is like my biggest struggle. I'm always into them, always trying to get the right one. And maybe it's just because I'm a little picky, you know. I'm seeing what other guys are killing. And I've kind of struggled with elk, like actually piling them up. But yeah, I got some good bulls on the wall, and I want to keep that, you know, continuing that, getting some good 6 points, and always trying to, you knock down a critter that big, that far away from the truck, you want to be psyched about it, you know, you want to be happy and pretty excited. So I'm kind of picky when it comes to elk, but it's definitely my biggest struggle, and that's why I love it so much. You know, it's like, I don't have it mastered. I'm just, you know, still feel like I'm learning and picking it up. I love that I can always get on bulls, like every single time. I love that.
Yeah, like I said, you know, in the opening, I mean, I don't know anybody that honestly gets themselves into as many opportunities and puts themselves within 100 yards or closer of as many big bulls. I mean, it you definitely have a knack for finding them and getting into them. Now, let's just give a scenario. You're heading to Colorado. You got an over-the-counter or a low-point unit. You pulled a tag. You're going to go hunt middle of September. With your style, what are you looking for? Because I think that's where a lot of guys right off the rip are scared to death to try to elk hunt, because a lot of people think there's elk in every basin, there's elk on every mountain, and that's just not the case. You know, as nomadic as they are, if you're in the wrong spots, you could walk around the mountains for 5-6 days, never hear an elk, never see an elk, never smell an elk. I mean, hell.
Right.
We did that for
right.
a couple days in Idaho in great elk country with both of us covering. I mean, it took us days to figure out and find elk. And we both, you know, have a pretty decent idea of what the hell we're doing. So it just goes to show, you know, I mean, it's just how tough it can be. But what are you looking for right off the rip? So a lot of guys are going to have to e-scout, which, like you said, you know, you don't have time to spend 3-4 weeks at every spot and scout at every spot, you know, so you're going into this spot. We're in Colorado. What are you looking for? You're going to be there September 16th, so we know the rut's going to be in. You're hitting the end of the pre-rut, the beginning of the actual rut where breeding's taking place. What are you looking for? Like, where are you actually starting? Or what kind of screams, okay, this is elk country. This is what I want to hunt. This is where I want to be. What's kind of your playbook just off of the e-scouting? As far as like what you're looking for or what intrigues you, or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe it's you're crossing off what you don't want to hunt first, you know, and if that's the case, we can go over that. Maybe it's, hey, I don't want to hunt these south facers. Just doesn't seem to produce for me as much as the north. So maybe you're crossing stuff off, but what's kind of going through the mental checklist for Dan when he's getting ready for a hunt like this, trying to figure out where he's going to start and what his plans are?
Okay, so like the big, what I would call the big three, elk are not mule deer. Elk need water.
Yep.
Every single day, elk need water. So you need to focus on feed, cover, and water. And put yourself, you know, obviously I'm always the guy that tries to get as far away from the road as I can. I don't do the truck running around, glassing from the truck. That's just not who I am. I like to hike back in there, use my feet as much as I can, get some elevation, and live and die behind my glass.
Yep.
I got to run good glass. I got to put the time in. And it's prime time. It's glass in mornings. It's glass in evenings. Like, don't even attempt to start hiking back to camp or back to your truck until after dark. Like,
yep.
Let the lights go off, then start hiking out. I mean, it's just, it's a life changer. It'll change everything if you just stick it out. Like, we have headlamps for a reason. Why are we not using them? You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, let's just stay in as long as you possibly can. So for elk, I like to, you know, during the rut, you're trying to find good cow population. You want to find the bulls. They're going to need water. I mean, it just all depends. Like, Colorado, you got thick trees. You got big-ass mountains.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say get some elevation and know where water is and know where some good feed is and just start glassing those big, deep draws and listening and travel. Like, put on 3 miles, listen. You know, this has got to be prime time, though. So mornings and evenings are prime time for listening for bugles. So you got to do that, and you just got to keep moving. Keep putting on those miles and try this. And heat check is basically what it is. You know what I mean?
Now, are you running with your camp on your back a lot, Dan? So basically, are you trying to be as absolutely mobile, which I know the, you know, I mean, I've hunted with you, so I know probably the answer to this already, but you're wanting to be as mobile as possible. So I'm guessing 90% of your elk hunts, it is you are packing up camp in the morning, putting it on your back, and wherever you end up at night, that's where you end up.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, last year, for instance, when I was hunting, like, Idaho and Montana and all over the place,
yep.
I hunt, like, so many hours and so many, you know, basically hours in different places, and it's always travel, it's always go time. I didn't even hardly even set up a tent last year. I love sleeping underneath the stars. Sleeping bag gets wet because of the dew or some rain, or you wake up and you got snow on you. So during the day, I'll just, you know, put my sleeping bag on a branch and let it dry. But like I said, I'm so like either exhausted or excited to be hunting that I don't even take time to really set up a tent anymore. I'm just basically sleeping under the stars or a little bivy shelter, or, you know, put the sleeping bag underneath. If my truck's there, put it underneath the truck or underneath the tree. So I've been going as light as possible. I feel like anytime you can lose weight, you're going to stay in the field longer and you're going to have more energy. So it's like just the lighter you can be and the more you're willing to travel, it just keeps you in the hunt longer.
Yeah.
But you got to be willing to be a little bit uncomfortable. I mean, I'm sleeping in the dirt. I mean, I don't even know how many days last year just sleeping under the stars. I mean, a pile. So I like that. I like just the basics of it. I really, really enjoy just how rough it is, you know. That's what's fun about hunting with buddies is they get to enjoy this, you know, what I call the suck.
Oh,
just
yeah.
As much as you get that, you know. It's like, this is miserable. And you look over at your buddy and he's like, yeah, he's miserable too. All right, this just kind of made it fun, you know.
Yep. No, absolutely, man. I mean, there's misery has to have company on those hunts sometimes, you know.
Absolutely. So, yeah, elk are different, man. They elk do travel. You do get into a pocket of them. And just as long as nobody's bumping them, they have their areas and they kind of stick to them. You know what I'm saying? So it's like I just hate the thought of being the guy calling to them and alerting these elk and these cows and these bulls and letting you know that something just showed up. Like, I mean, think about it. These elk live together every single day of their lives.
Right.
And all of a sudden you show up with a bugle tube and they're like, man, that doesn't sound like one of my buddies. You know, that doesn't sound like somebody I know. So it just kind of, it puts them on edge for me anyways. And maybe it takes being a better caller than what I used to be. I'm not sure, but I don't know. Calling doesn't do it for me. I love just being the sneaky guy, like pretend I'm mountain lion guy and I just sneak in there and try to make a kill just like a cat would. So that's just true hunting for me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, it's a really effective tactic because, you know, with calling,
it works everywhere.
Yeah. And there's so many variables with calling, you know, there's, you've got to have the right bull, the right setup, the right wind, and you get all set up and the wind shifts. And then, okay, now you got to totally tear down your setup as far as what you got going on and make a move and then try to get, okay, here's where he'll probably come from. I can call from here, or my buddy's going to go back here 80 yards and call behind me and try to pull the bull. I mean, there's just so many variables that are out of your control, whereas coyoteing a bull or sneaking in on a bull, you know, it's pretty much it's just you and the actual stock. That's your variables. I mean, you can't control the elk, but you can control what you're doing and playing the wind the right way and making the right moves. And there's more control, I feel like, in that game than there is the call game.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just, you know, you're calling, like you said, you almost need a buddy to help you call. You got a bull racing in. He's looking for a fight or looking for cows or he's looking for something.
Yep.
So he's high alert. Things happen really quick. You're probably going to have to be, you know, if you're going to hunt that way, that's great and all, but I think you got to be really clutch. Like, just everything's got to be right. Your shot's got to be quick. Everything about it's got to be quick. You got to draw your bow at the right time. There's so many scenarios that you're going to fail or something's going to happen. And if you take my route, if you think about what I'm doing, I'm sneaking up to a bull. He's either bugling, chasing cows. I'm in the herd. I'm coyoting them. They don't know I'm there. And I can actually, and I've done this in the past, I can draw my bow on a bull and nobody knows I'm there and hold it, draw, and let down and then get a little bit closer, draw my bow. I mean, hunting with Brian a couple years ago in Idaho, I mean, we're in and out of this group of elk, and I don't know how many times him and I drew our bows and let back down and got a little bit closer. And I mean, it's just, they have no idea you're there. Nothing is rushed, if that makes sense to you. You know what I mean? Like, everything's almost in our terms. We control a lot more of the hunt this way, and then instead of making the bull make a decision and, you know, trying to be super clutch on your shot and make it, you know, you only have a certain amount of time to get it done. Our way, shit, you could take all day and make it right for yourself. You know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely. I mean, I totally agree. Now, what I know, you know, you and Brian love to cover country at night and find, you know, because I mean, a lot of these elk,
yeah,
they get, and you know, I've got to experience that in Idaho with you. The first time I elk hunted with you, just you and I mean, we put on, a lot of miles at night. You know, we were up 2-3 in the morning and running ridge lines, and people are, you know, probably listening are like, what in the hell? Why are you doing? You know, that's nuts. But the philosophy behind it's golden. And you and Brian kind of have this perfected as far as, you know, if you can find a bull that wants to bugle at night because the pressure, they know that pressure is not going to be from humans at night. So they're more apt to bugle, you know, they're rutting harder probably in the evening, you know, there again at nighttime, there's not the pressure, you know, they don't have the human factor. Walk us through that, because a lot of people, I think, don't really understand the philosophy behind, okay, I'm going to go out at 2 or 3 a.m., I'm going to listen, I'm going to hear a bull, okay, then what? So walk us through a step-by-step, all right, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you're getting up, you get a shot of coffee in you, you leave your tent, or you don't even have a tent, you roll up your sleeping bag, you're heading for a ridge line. Okay, from there on, now, what's your plan from then till morning? What are you looking for? What are you trying to, you know, walk us through a scenario of you find a bull, he's bugling, it's still dark. How are you attacking that? Like, what are you doing? You know, because there's a method to the madness. You can't just go bum rush in straight towards this bull in the pitch black and expect that you're not going to blow them all out of there. You know, there's a very big chess game that's going to go on from the time that you find, or I should say you listen and hear a bull in the middle of the night till morning. There's definitely a game plan and a strategy that's got to be in place. So what's kind of the game plan or the blueprint for success when you're trying to find bulls and locate bulls at night? Because this is I've killed some bulls this way, and this is a very, very, very effective tactic if you've got a game plan for how to purposely use this to your advantage. You know, like I said, a guy can't just go run right in the middle of the dark and head towards the herd. It's not quite that simple, but you guys got it down packed as far as, you know, okay, here's the bull, here's where he's heading, here's our plan. So walk us through that, Dan.
All right, well, you're kind of giving away my secrets. That's like my secret weapon. The reason why we started hunting, we call it hunting at night, but we're not actually hunting. Don't take that the wrong way. We're not actually hunting. But what we do is, you know, when you're hunting with a buddy, you're jacked up. You don't really want to go to sleep anyways. You're having fun.
Yep.
The reason why we started this whole deal is because we hunt – let's see. Let me think about this. So we hunt so many different places. We don't have a go-to spot that we hunt every year, you know, year after year. So we're always finding new places and learning new spots. So we don't have that like honey hole that, well, go up this draw and there's always elk right here. This is what I hunt every year. We don't have that. We show up to a new area. You got all day to try to find elk, and then you kind of, what people don't put together is you actually have all night to find elk too. So we travel and travel and travel and super quiet and listen and look for tracks. I mean, just, you know, use the moonlight and just kind of figure it out. And then we're really, really good at judging the wind. The wind is huge for us. We're always trying to watch the wind and figure out what it's going to do. Like at night, it's totally different. Everything's kind of getting sucked down. Let the sun come up. Those thermals change. You're always watching. You're always getting yourself close enough to the elk once you find the bulls that you're after, but not too close until it's the right time. It's just like, it's a lot like muley hunting. You don't bed, you know, his first bed in the morning, and you know for a fact he's going to get up, you know, 9-10 o'clock, and he's going to change beds, or he's going to follow the shape. Think about that with elk. You get close enough to the elk, so you're in striking distance. So you got this wind first thing in the morning. Lights are coming on. You can attack from the wind and suck down. So you want to play below them or right beside them. But you have to be far enough away. If that wind does change, that you're not going to blow it up, because now all of a sudden now you're going above them, because that the thermals are coming up the hill, and now all of a sudden you're stalking from above them down. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So you're always kind of like, you're trying to keep in with the herd. Like we always call it coyote in the herd.
Yep.
But I mean, you could be a mile away or you could be just a couple hundred yards away, and it'll work for you. So it's just kind of weird that it's kind of been kind of our little hidden secret, like nobody really knows about. Like nobody done Honda Indians, and we'll either jump in the truck and go drive 5 miles, get out and hike to a point, like, you know, all next. You're like, oh, let's hike to this little vantage. You park the truck, shut everything off. You just walk out there with your flip-flops or whatever and just kind of, you know, coffee or whatever you're drinking, and just sit there for 15, 20 minutes and just listen. You know, just hang out, listen, see what's going on, and then back into the truck, drive another 5 miles or whatever and do it again. Or in the mountains, you know, hike up to this ridge, listen, you know, drop some elevation at night with your headlamp and get onto another ridge and listen the other direction. You know, it's just, yeah, it's extra effort. You're going to get less sleep. I get all that, but it's so worth it. We found such great hunting by literally hunting or scouting at nighttime.
Yep.
It's paid off. Like, it's definitely, definitely paid off. Brian killed that super wide giant bull a couple years ago with me, and it was the same thing. We dropped elevation. We're like, man, what are these elk doing? Let's go figure this out. And so we dropped elevation. We circled all the way around. We kind of watched and listened to see where the herd was going at night. And like, man, if we set up here, we get them down in the sagebrush, like it's flatlands, and then they're going in the mountains, they're coming down to the hay fields, and I don't know, we just started thinking about it and just kind of traveling around at night. And that next morning, we just did it right. He just belly crawled in and just taking a shot on, you know, a big old freaking wide, you know, 320, 330 bull, whatever he was. And just, it just worked out. And it was just by taking a gamble at night and just, you know, changing it up. We're always changing it up. It's never the same process at year in and year out. It's always something a little bit different, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it just goes to show the extra effort and the persistence, man, it just always pays off, especially in the mountains. I mean, you know, the guy that's starving for success out there versus the guy that's, I mean, I'm hungry for it, but I'm not starving. That, man, there's such a big difference. You know, that guy that's starving for it, he'll put in the extra effort and he'll go the extra mile. He'll get up, sleep from maybe 10 o'clock at night till 1, 2, and then be up and be listening for bulls and running ridge lines and trying to spend the first few hours, you know, well, the last few hours of darkness trying to locate bulls. And, you know, I think it's a great tactic. And I mean, it's a tactic that a lot of guys won't ever use and they won't do because a lot of guys don't like messing around in the middle of the night. A lot of guys don't want to put in that extra effort. But for those listening that do want to put in the extra effort and they do want to go that extra mile, not afraid of the dark, you know, not afraid to walk around without your headlamp on and can, you know, navigate. Man, I mean, this is a deadly tactic, super deadly, especially in the middle of the rut when the bulls are vocal and you're relying on hearing them, not just seeing them. It can really put you ahead of the game. And now, so if you locate bulls at night, I mean, how big of a factor is then looking at a map immediately of trying to figure out where they're going or where they're coming from? Because I know, like for me, I killed my best bull to date in Utah two years ago. And basically, I figured out from two nights of listening to him, he was going to water and then taking his harem back up into dark timber a few hours after daylight. I was able to get in there, basically cut him off in that whole herd and kill him as he was heading back up to dark timber. Now, I knew this was taking place because I found him at night. He was bugling. I was able then to put eyes on him during the day, watched him do this in the morning, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, how big of a factor is, okay, you hear a bull, now you need to pull up Onyx or pull up your maps and try to figure out, okay, where is he going? Where are they coming from? Where's timber? Where's water? Where's feed? Because realistically, I mean, that can set you up for right at first daylight, just like Brian killing that big wide bull you were just talking about in the morning. You know, if you've got a good game plan and can get ahead of these herds, either to water or back to bed or whatever, I mean, you can kind of play the waiting game and let them work themselves right up into your arrow, basically. And I know you guys love to do that, but, you know, so what's kind of your philosophy there? I mean, you're just kind of trying to figure out, like, okay, they're heading towards water or coming back, or, you know, just, I'm guessing Onyx is probably a huge determining factor on where the next move's going to be made.
You're exactly right. You're almost playing the, having the bull help you. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You said, you cut that bull off. The reason why you did that is you didn't want to crawl in there with all of his cows when they're all bedded.
Right.
And you know what I mean? In the thick timber. I mean, what are your odds doing that? But knowing how, like Onyx, like you're talking about, like the maps, I mean, knowing how that land, how it lays in these draws and where they're getting water and just how they're cruising through country and just it's just like how they get from point A to point B and figuring out your wind and, you know, Onyx anymore. Shit, it gives you the temperature. It gives you the weather. I mean, it's just insane. I mean, the biggest tool we have is just knowing what's ahead of us or how to predict the elk are doing or what everything's going to happen. So like you did, you played that bull. You outsmarted him is what you did. So you set yourself up in a situation where no matter what, you know he's coming up here somewhere to bed. So if I can get the wind right, let him walk, either walk into me, or it's always easier to coyote the herd when they're up on their feet, because you can be on your feet or crawling, and you're just keeping your eyes on their heads and what they're doing. They're down grazing there. It's your time to move. They're stopped. They're looking around. You're frozen. So you can get away with a lot around elk. The moment you think an elk's got you busted, and if you just do like the staring contest, you sit there completely still. It might take 20 minutes. Those elk will just almost forget about you. We've done this so many times, it's ridiculous.
Yep.
So it's outsmarting them. Like you said, it's using the lay of the land. Like you draw, you're waiting for the last cow to get into this draw, and all of a sudden you're back on your feet and you're sprinting around to get the wind right or to cut them off. So you're waiting for every single eye and every single ear and nose to get away from you. Let it go, and now it's your time to run. So it's knowing those maps and how the draws, and there's like a term for, what's it called? Just how everything is developed around you. You know what I mean? Like the draws, just the basics, the hills and stuff. There's like a name for all that.
Just all
the contour of everything.
All the topography itself and how it's all played together.
Exactly. So knowing that, you can use that. I mean, how do you think we're successful on antelope hunting? A lot of times you need that sagebrush. You need that one hill. I mean, those things have freaking Swarovskis for eyeballs.
Yeah, they do.
You're going to be so busted. So it's using everything that you got. It's not, you know what I mean? It's not being the longest, you know, the best at shooting 100 yards with your bow. It's not that guy. It's knowing what you can use around you to get away with and to get closer. And I don't know, that's what I'm into, is just figuring it out. There's been so many lost opportunities that I've had. Everything I've learned is the hard way and by failure, and this doesn't work, so figure something different out. You know what I mean? It's like, why keep doing the same damn thing year in and year out if it's not working? Like, figure something out. Like, just mix it up. Even if it seems weird to you, shit, it might work. Like, I don't know. I love troubleshooting. It's part of my job. It's part of life. Everybody has to troubleshoot, you know, especially when it comes to bow hunting. Bow hunting is not easy. It is not easy.
Sure isn't.
I don't know, man. Got to put in the time. The people that are putting in the time and the effort, it will pay for itself. Yeah, you will get better if you're willing to be that guy. You're the last guy at camp. You're the last guy at back to the trailhead or back to the truck. You know what I mean? You're like, you're the guy that's just like, well, it's middle of the night. I got 5 more miles. I hope I'm going the right direction. You know what I mean? You just got to be comfortable.
Right.
Your surroundings, you got to be comfortable. I'm pretty fortunate. I've hunted the mountains so many years, and we are so infested with wolves and grizzly bears that it's not for everybody. And I've just learned, had so many close encounters, and just keeping my calm, and, you know, obviously hunting with a good buddy or something, just so your comfort level. But I've learned so many ways to just succeed in the mountains and to feel comfortable, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's like, I don't care if the lights are off and I have to hike 10 miles. I don't care. It doesn't bother me at all. Like, I don't know. You just got to be comfortable. You got to put yourself in situations where you got to grow. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. Being comfortable, being uncomfortable is a term that gets thrown around a lot. And a lot of guys, I don't think they quite understand what, you know, being comfortable when you're uncomfortable really truly means. But on mountain hunts and adventure bow hunts and stuff that you're doing year in and year out, you have to. If you're not comfortable in situations that are uncomfortable, there's really no point of even applying for these tags and trying to get them, because they're 99% a suck fest. I mean, they're hard.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
tough. I mean, they're, you know, like I said, the guys that are punching all the tags year in and year out, those guys are starving for success. They are constantly starving for every aspect of the hunt, for every aspect of looking in the mirror, of getting better. You know, they're constantly trying to be more proficient at their craft. I mean, I talk to you and Brian all throughout the year, you know, and I mean, there's a common theme between guys like you, you know, the Travis Nowotny's and the Devin Leonard's and these guys that are just constantly killing big animals, and they're constantly in big animals. They're always trying to figure out, how do I get better at stalking? How do I get my bow to shoot better? How do I get this better? What's the best 10? I need a better sleeping bag. I need to be lighter. I mean, it's just a constant whirlwind. And that's how I've set my life up and structured my life, is to be able to put it around my kids and bow hunting and trying to get better and go on all these adventures and have all these tags and do all this. And it's, you know, when you finally get on these hunts, man, it's just, you get to stretch the legs and just freaking go at it. But it's like, you know, the guys that are just so hungry for it, and are constantly putting in that work, you know, like what you're doing year in and year out, those are the guys that get opportunities and whatnot. What do you think, Dan, when it comes to elk hunting specifically, where do you think the biggest screw up is? Like, where do you see guys really, I guess, falling off the map, or just not? Maybe it's something that's not understood, or it's like a false reality, or maybe it's just a common thing that you see guys do that's just like, you just shake your head at. Where do you think a big, like, the big no-no is when it comes to bow hunting bull, specifically in the rut? I mean, you know, you're like me. Gosh, I've made about every mistake you could possibly make when it comes to, you know, to whitetails, and I've learned the hard ways through that, and that's why, you know, at this point I'm pretty proficient at it, but it's because I've failed so many times over the last 20 some years of bow hunting them that, you know, I've just gained so much knowledge by screwing up. And I know you're the same with elk. So where do you think's like a, if you were telling someone that's new to elk hunting, like where was your major screw up, or what's the biggest thing that you've had to really work on or take away from your elk game and make it better to where you're still seeing a lot of people struggle with, or it's just something that needs to be like kind of, I guess, maybe corrected? Maybe it's mentally, maybe it's physically. I mean, you know, there's a lot that could be said for this, but I'm just interested on what you think would be like the number one thing you're seeing guys kind of screw up on when it comes to getting into bow hunting elk. Because it is, it's a very different game than mule deer, antelope, and I hear guys compare it to, yeah, it's kind of like mule deer hunting. And I'm like, no, elk hunting is not like mule deer hunting. I mean, it's two completely different styles. And no, like, yes, you can glass and yes, you can spot and stalk both, but the tendencies and what the animals need and what they do and just the whole game itself, like, no, it's a very, very different game, two totally different games. But, yeah, I'm just interested what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, no, right now it's ever evolving right now, you know what I mean? So it's like, just think of the last 10 years, how we started out, and what it's turning into, and how popular it is, and hunting pressure, and this and that. So, like, to answer your question, man, it's the balance between being almost timid or being overly aggressive. Yep. There's a fine line there, and you got to be able to know when to attack and when to back out.
Yep.
And back to the calling thing, what I see people doing is, like, they almost have it right. I think people over the years listen to all these podcasts, listen to everything, watching the hunting videos, people are starting to understand, I got to get to that elevation, I got to get to the vantage point.
Right.
I see people doing that a lot now, but what I see is them just giving it 5 minutes instead of giving it 3 hours. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, and then they're back at camp before it's dark, or they're not actually putting in the full amount of time that they should be putting in. And it's like, yeah, they're right here. I don't think I should go. I don't think this is going to work. I'm not going to try it. It's like, really? You're not even going to try? Like, I don't know. There's something to be said there. You finally see your bull you want to do or you want to see, and you're like, oh, tomorrow morning I'll get on him tomorrow morning. Well, I've learned there's so many hunters anymore that you might not see that one bull again. It's like, you take any chance you have whenever, you know, any time possibility you can try it. You know what I mean? Like, jump on it, any opportunity, just take it. So it's like, if it doesn't always work out, at least you try. At least put forth some effort on it, you know? So it's, I don't know, it's tough. Like, I see a lot of guys, they give up too early. I see them being way too loud in the mountains. I hear people talking. You'll be amazed. I've learned that working around water for so many years is you can be whispering with the right wind. You can across our little, what we call our pond, which is actually part of the lake.
Right.
It's like, quarter of the mile wide,
yep.
and you can hear what people are talking about. So it's like, think about that. The wind's blowing, you're talking, or you're walking through, or you're breaking branches. Trust me, those elk and deer, anything around you is gonna hear you. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. I think it's hard to be patient but yet aggressive at the same time. I know that sounds kind of funny, but you know exactly what I'm talking about. There's a balance that has to happen there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there's times to go and there's times to sit on your heels and have to kind of sit and wait and be more patient. But yet, you know, I've always said, and I've said this on numerous podcasts and to numerous people, you know, when it comes to hunting, with one thing I learned about you and Brian is if there is a sliver of good opportunity, you guys are strapping up the bino harness, strapping on the pack tighter, grabbing the bow, and away you guys go. I mean, I've seen you and Brian both take off running to get to a stock, to get to an animal with a 45 minutes left of shooting light. And I'm thinking, gosh, there ain't no way in hell. And I'll be damned 15, 20 minutes later, here you guys are popping up over, you know, you're dropping down in, and I'm like, oh my God, they're going to be there. I mean, it's crazy, but there's, you know, you guys are never looking for a reason to not go on a stalk. It's always, you're looking for a reason to go on a stalk. And I think that puts you guys in so many opportunity situations and puts you guys in front of so many big critters, because the mentality is not, well, why should I not go on the stock? It's, ooh, I should go on the stock because of this. And you guys are constantly figuring out, you know, if it's even just a decent chance, you and Brian are going. And that is something that I think a lot of people, they're looking for this perfect opportunity that rarely exists. And like you said, you brought up a great point. With all the pressure and all the hunters, you might only get one opportunity, and that opportunity might be 50-50. But that might be your one and only opportunity on a 10-day elk hunt. And if you don't take that, see, in my opinion, that's solid odds. I've always said if the odds are 30% or higher in my favor, I'm not even thinking about it. I'm taking off. If they're 50, oh, that's a no-brainer. I mean, that's you got to roll the dice on 50-50. Absolutely, like I'm betting house money on myself. For sure. And I know that's how, you know,
you're exactly right.
You and Brian are.
You're exactly right.
Yeah. You gotta bet on yourself.
Well, like you said, like it's exactly like you're the whole reason why you're there is to get yourself an opportunity on an elk or on a deer or yep. whatever you're hunting. You almost have to create your own opportunities at times. I'm not one of those lucky hunters. You hear about it all the time. You see it on IG. You see it all the time. Like, how did this guy kill that animal? Like, it's crazy. I never had an animal. I've never lucked into anything. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've always had to work my ass off for every single opportunity. So, like you said, man, he's 3 miles away. I got 20 minutes to run over there and to make a proper stock and try to get an arrow off before the lights come off, you know, turn off or whatever. So it's like, there's so many times it's like, yeah, 50% probably get there and it's going to be dark and I'm just gonna have to walk all the way back. But it's like, who cares? That's why I'm here. That's why I've bought this tag. I've yep. driven across this state to do this or whatever the case may be. That's the whole point why you're there. So it's like, why not try to take every opportunity? If you come up short, so what? You got tomorrow, or you got,
yep.
You know, in the morning, or whatever you got. You got another opportunity. You just got to give yourself. That's why, Brian, we've hunted so many years elk hunting together. He laughs at me because he's always like, "Dude, how do you just find elk all the time?" It's just like, I don't give up. I get myself in there. Like, we'll come back to the middle of the day, get something to eat on the tailgate or at camp or whatever. And I'm like, dude, I got a couple bulls bedded. He's like, what the hell? He's like, all right, I guess we're off to the races. You know, I don't know. I love to figure it out. Elk are just so, they're entertaining to watch. They can be really aggressive, and it's just everything about them is just super cool. Like, we got a good opportunity. We're gonna hunt. We kind of mixed it up this year. Brian ended up drawing a great moose tag.
Yeah,
he drew the moose tag where we want to elk hunt. So it's an opportunity that we have that we're going to be hunting bulls and chasing bugles and doing our thing. But at all times, we're gonna I'm gonna help him out as much as I can. We're gonna try to glass him up a great big bull moose. And it's like, it's weird. Like, people go their whole life like, oh, that's all I want is a moose tag. And it's like Brian's like, it's like we're almost putting it off. It's not our, we're not there to chase moose. We're there to chase elk. But if a big moose steps out, he's gonna go for it. So it's just kind of funny how his mind works and how we're gonna play this. And I have no doubt he's gonna drop a great big bull moose this year
for sure.
The scary part is, the scary part, he's gonna drop a giant 6-point, and then the same day he's gonna drop a giant moose. Oh. And I'm gonna look at him and go, holy crap, guy, like, how many backpacks did you bring? So it's going to be cool, man. It's going to be a good experience. But, yeah, take every opportunity that can possibly, even if the odds are 1%, why not at least try? See what happens.
Oh, absolutely.
I like that.
Yeah.
Like you I got to get over to your neck of the woods and chase some whiteys around.
Absolutely.
I want to try that. I've never done the tree stand thing before. I want to get into it. I want to check it out, see what you guys are doing out east, and see why it's so popular. I bet it's going to be pretty fun.
Oh, it is. I mean, and Brian came out a few years ago, and I mean, it's a totally different game because he wanted to get down and go spot and stalk so bad. And I'm like, man, I'm like, you can do that. But I'm like, the problem is we've got oak leaves everywhere. We've got briars everywhere. It's just so loud.
Right.
It's so noisy. You know, it's so hard to stock anything out here. Like, that's just
right.
And then if you blow 20, 30 deer out, they run up this valley and take 10 more with them. So you just blew out every opportunity that you had that entire day. Like, all everything that was in there is now gone. So
yeah,
and they might be gone for a few days because they just make big circles. You know, they'll go over to the neighbors and they'll end up coming back. And it's just like, you
sure.
know, it's just not the conducive way to hunt them. If I could spot and stalk whitetails here, like I can hunt elk and mule deer and antelope out west, I would like it more. But I'll be honest, I'm getting bored.
Gotcha.
I'm not bored with hunting big whitetails. I get bored. It's hard for me to sit in tree stands now because I want to get down and glass and spot and stalk. That's just like my jam, man. I just love it. I'm ate up with it. That's what I want to do. And it's like, that's not the best way to, you know, to get one killed. But yeah, no, I mean, back to, you know, everything you said, man, spot on. It just really is. I mean, if you got a good opportunity and you're like, man, yep, there's a sliver of a chance I can make that happen, you got to go do it. You got to make the play. You got to take off and go. I mean, it's, you know, you might only get that one opportunity. And yeah, man, there's no doubt.
Yep.
I'll be waiting on Brian to kill a big bull moose. Man, that's going to be epic. Yeah, if you guys kill a bull elk and a moose, you guys are going to need front backpacks on, back a quarter on the front, quarter on the back, and just stand up straight like a 2x4 and head to the truck, man. Just stiff leg it.
Exactly. No, I'm excited for the challenge. You know me. I like anything that's probably miserable. I kind of like it,
yep.
You know? Like I
yep.
said, my favorite thing is looking over either at you or my buddy Dylan or Brian and going, oh, yeah, you're miserable just like
yeah.
I am. That just makes it fun for me, you know? I love that. I love the misery. I mean, if you don't love the misery and the storms and the lightning and the bugs and the mud or whatever the problem is, because there's always a problem on any hunt you're
oh,
on,
yeah.
There's always something, right? I mean, there's always something. And it's like, you almost got to, like, you got to look forward to shit
yep.
like that. You got to look forward to the suck is what I always call it. You
yep.
know, like I put something on, you know, a post or whatever I did. And I was like, I can't wait for the suck to begin. You know what I mean? And that just describes it to me. It's like,
yep.
I know what I'm talking about. I don't know. I like it, dude. I'm so excited. I mean, as we're doing this podcast right now, we're sitting here talking, doing the podcast, and I've been loading my truck up to go chase these speed goats right now. My truck's all loaded. I'm ready to go freaking spot some goats and just spot and stalk, man. Like, I'm in my flip-flops just like I was a couple years ago. I shot that nice
yeah, you did.
Flip-flops.
I remember that.
I'm going to go do that again.
I remember
dude,
that.
It slows you down. It slows you down. It's all the cactus. You move slower. It's like, I'm not going to touch my foot on those cactus or whatever. So just, I know it slows the guy down and it's working for me. So I'm like, you know, hunting goats and flip-flops is my new thing.
I remember whenever you did that. I think you were with Brian, I believe. You guys were on your way to go to a
oh,
hunt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
What,
yeah, it's funny. Brian, like celebrity guy, is still hunting with me. And I don't know why. It's just, we just laugh every time we're around each other. I don't know. There's something there. We just make each other laugh. And it's like we push each other
oh,
a little
yeah.
harder every single time. You
yep.
know, it's just, it's fun. You've seen it. You've been around it. You love
yep.
it.
Oh yeah, no, it changed my life as a bow hunter, coming out and hunting with you guys, you know, antelope, elk, bear, you know, it really did. It changed me, just my philosophy and my outlook and my mental game. And I've changed my bow setup, my rig, and just my life. I mean, I've structured my life to be able to do what you guys are doing, because it's just, I'm like, man, these guys got it figured out. These guys are living the life I want to live. And I can't just sit back on third base and hang out and watch you guys hit dingers the whole time. And I'm just like, dude, I got to get in this. I gotta get over to home plate too. You know, I mean, I'm right. Just like, gosh,
yeah,
damn, I gotta get home too, you know? And so yeah, man, I really can't thank you guys enough for that, for just being good buddies and being able to kind of show me, you know, that aspect of your guys' lives. It's really been a game changer for me. But what tags do you have, Dan, before we close out here? So what's on the agenda? What's like the rest of your year look like? Like, give us a rundown, kind of what you got, where you're going to be. You've always got a bunch of places you hunt every fall, so it's always fun to kind of know, you know, where you're bouncing around to and whatnot.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, I came up short in Nevada, but it's open for a few more weeks, so I'm thinking about sneaking back down to Nevada for like 3-4 more days and see if I can put something together. So I'm planning that. That's going to happen like within a couple days. Like, I'm getting ready to leave. Do that. I'm actually going to head to another brand new state I've never freaking hunted, but like, I don't know, I'm excited about it. It'd be easy, not easy, geez, I don't know why I said that, nothing's ever easy, but I'm gonna go and try the North Dakota. I'm gonna go put feet on the ground in North Dakota and see if I can come up with something there. Montana's gonna be big, you know. I got Montana, I got antelope to fill, I got my elk tag, my mule deer tag, which mule deer is pretty wild in Montana. I'm pretty picky anymore. I won't kill a buck unless he's huge until during rifle season. I only hunt mule deer during rifle season with my bow, because I love to chase mule deer during the rut.
Well, that makes two of us.
And such a long hunting season here, you can do that. So I got everything in Montana. So I got elk, deer, antelope. I didn't get a spring bear, so I'll be chasing bears this fall. And then I got a North Dakota hunt, which I don't know. I'll let you know how that goes. That'll be brand new for me. Oh man, I got Brian's moose hunt. So we got to get that. That's pretty important to us. And then let's see, there's some more. Oh, I got Idaho. I got late season Idaho. I got early season Idaho. I got Arizona deer tag.
Christmas.
I got some bouncing around to do.
Yeah, you do. Man, oh man. Yeah, you do.
I got some things in the making, you know. So yeah, I got some plans. Whatever else I can pick up along the way too, you know, just as long as I can sneak out of work and do my thing. That's all I want, you know.
Well, I'll be anxiously awaiting, like I am every year, for the text message to come through from Dan Hever, and it's a picture message. I know it's something big with either you or Brian sitting behind it, man. So I'm always pulling for you guys, always rooting for you guys. I'll be anxiously awaiting the pictures to come through. I know damn well you guys put in the work and the effort, and that's why Big Critters fall to both of you guys' eras every single year. So I'll be waiting on it, man. You guys got a lot of adventure hunting. Well, hell, it's hunting season right now. I was going to say coming up, but you guys are already in the mix. You already got one buck down. So, yeah, you guys are right in the thick of things. I feel like an antelope's going to fall, man. I think it's the flip-flops. I really do. I feel like you're going to stick one again and then head to probably Nevada.
That's funny. This morning I wake up, start having some coffee. I'm like, what am I doing today? I was like, I got a day off work. What am I doing? I'm like, oh, yeah, it's archery season. It's antelope season here in Montana. You know, I'm still recovering from Nevada, you know.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, shit, go grab my bow. I'm like, oh, crap, yeah. I took a huge fall in Nevada, and I actually bent my cam down around my string. I couldn't even draw my bow back without it just, you know.
Rolled it right over.
Everything. So first thing this morning, I'm down here drinking coffee. The wife's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I got to demo my bow. I pulled all the strings off, pulled the cams off, fixed the cam, put everything back, got it re-sighted in this morning, and then do a little jog, and then do the ice bath, and then do the podcast with you, and now I'm ready to go chase some goats. So it's already been a day.
Man, it has.
I just got to try to put your life back together.
Yeah.
But it's always something, a million miles an hour. You got to come back here and start chasing these critters again. You had so much fun with me last couple years ago.
Oh, man.
You freaking loved it. Like,
we did.
I didn't think you wanted to go home. You're like,
I didn't.
is there any houses for sale out here? I'm like, oh, dude, there is. They were just really expensive right now.
I didn't. I changed my – that last antelope hunt that I was on, it was – well, me and you spent like 12 or 13 days in Idaho. Then we hooked up with Brian, went out to western – or eastern Montana.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I changed my flight two different times. I was supposed to go home on like day 12, changed it once. There went $250 yeah. bucks. Changed it again. There went another $250 bucks. Like I've never been to Montana for spring bear season, for antelope, or for elk with you guys. It's a little fun fact. I have never went on a hunt yet with Brian Barney or Dan Heverin and not changed my flight to stay longer, at least for a day. I spent $280 one time. I bought the ticket right in Brian's kitchen at his old place. And Holly was like, you're really going to spend $280 to bear hunt one more day? I said, oh, you bet your ass I am. And she just walked away and shook her head. She's like, you guys, I'll tell you. But I've never went on a hunt with you guys yet where I haven't tried to squeeze just even one more day out of it.
Oh, my gosh. It's so fun. And you killed two giant antelope, like great, great ones. Like, holy, I always thought I was like the antelope guy. I've killed some good goats. But holy cow, you had that last one you killed with me was wild.
Yep.
That buck is wild. You remember the length on that thing, how it leaned forward.
Oh, yeah.
That is a picture-perfect goat. That's what everybody here is desperate for. Even with a long-range rifle, that's like that's the buck they're looking for, you know? So it's like for us guys to get it done with a bow, I mean, it is – antelope's cool, man, because you're going to mess up. You're going to mess up 20 times
Absolutely.
Until you get it right. It is so much fun.
It's a great way to hone your skills and really figure out what your flaws are in your spotting game, your stalking game, your shooting game. I mean, they will let you know – they will let you know what you suck at. That's for sure.
Oh man, it's like the best practice though.
It is.
Like getting in shape for something is doing that one thing. You know what I mean? So it's like you want to be a better archery hunter. Well, go hunt antelope.
Yep.
Dedicate your whole life to the bow, to hunting antelope with the bow, and it'll be so punishing and so brutal on you. You're gonna question your sanity, how hard it is. But once you start figuring it out, start getting it done, start getting a couple of those things killed, it's like, oh my god, it's the only thing you can think about. So it's
absolutely.
I gotta get my goat before elk season starts. Like, elk's right here, right around the corner. Brian's been doing it. You know, Brian runs every day. Of course he does. He's been running up into the mountains and spotting all these new spots for elk this year. I know what he's doing. He's looking for his moose, but he's like, yeah, I found us some 6 points. I'm like, I know there's 6 points up there. I was like, I know what you're doing. He's looking for those giant paddles is what he's doing.
He is. I can't say I blame him.
Yeah, it'll be fun, dude. It'll be fun. I'll shoot you a pin on the Onyx map. I'll show you where we're going to be hunting. It's going to be wild. Right in the heart of grizzly bears.
Oh, perfect.
It's going to be great.
Perfect. You got to love that. The old G bears.
Oh, yeah. Well, like last year when I killed that black bear last year, or the year before I killed that bear, Brian's like, dude, where's your pistol? I'm like, oh, shit. Yeah, I forgot that. Where's your bear spray? I'm like, yeah, I forgot that too. And he's like, oh, good choices. So I went up there and I knocked down that bear. And I don't know if it was a sow or another boar. That bear followed me all the way to my truck. It was like 2.5 miles of packing out my bear and that other bear snapping his jaws. I would turn with my headlamp and see his eyes. He followed me all the way back to the truck. And I'm like, this is prime time to actually have something besides a bow in the middle of the night. That's like, why do I always have to learn the hard lessons? I'm still figuring it out. Been hunting for years. I'm still trying to learn.
That's funny. Yeah, I probably should have brought that. It's fine as a bear follows you out, snapping its jaws the whole way. Just letting you know, hey, I'm right here, buddy.
Yeah, I called Brian. I was like, Brian, you know where I'm at? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, good. If I'm not at your house in the next 2 hours, you come scoop me up off the mountain, would you?
I might be. You might have to wait a little while till this bear shits me out, but I'll be here somewhere.
Exactly. So, did you have to come back? You have to join the gang again and come freaking chase these Western game around and just see where you're at.
Absolutely, my man. There's nothing more fun than going out there with you guys. That's definitely, we got to make sure that happens next year for sure. We 2020, we were planning on doing it, and then COVID just completely destroyed everything as far as me coming out in the spring and then the elk season. I didn't know if they'd open up for me to draw. So, yeah, we got to get back on track with hunting together and whatnot. But, well, man, get your stuff ready. Go get yourself a flip-flop antelope buck killed, and then get your ass back to Nevada. You got a buck with your name on it over there. I know you do. I know you'll put in the effort. I know you'll put in the work. Man, I can't thank you enough for coming on, Dan. I'll be looking forward to what you and Brian are sending me here, hopefully in the next couple months, pictures of both you guys behind a bunch of big critters and stuff. Man, I'm stoked for you. I definitely can't say thanks enough. Appreciate the hell out of both of you guys, man, just for the friendship and all the knowledge over the years and whatnot, and all the laughs. My God, we've had a lot of laughs over the years. Jesus.
Oh, man, taking you out and letting you meet some of the friends and just getting your opinion. I mean, just, you know, small town Montana stuff. You're like, what? This is how you guys live? Like, this is wild.
It was, like, man.
Absolutely, man.
We've had a lot
it's
of fun.
It's so much fun, though. It's so fun.
Yeah.
No, absolutely, man.
It really is.
Let's do this again. Let's get through season or a couple tags down, and let's do this again. Let's touch base here after a while.
Absolutely. Hey, we'll be in touch. Good luck this season, Dan. Like I said, I'll be looking forward to seeing you behind some bucks and some bulls for sure.
All right. Well, I'm going to go. I got flip-flops on, bow and truck. I'll hopefully send you a picture in the next couple hours.
I'll be waiting on it, my man.
All right, dude. Nice work, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Talk soon, Dan.
All right. Later.
All right. You guys know what to do. Don't fucking settle. Hunting season is here. Talk to you guys next week.
Can you say the letter C? CNC Hunt Files.